Welcome to the Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. For more than two decades, author Dan Shaun has been creating stories that blend psychological unease with emotional clarity. From his National Book Award-nominated collection Among the Missing to novels like Await Your Reply and Ill Will, his work is consistently asked how our past, sometimes buried, sometimes forgotten, shapes who we become. Shaun's latest, One of Us, carries us into early 20th century America, where a traveling sideshow carnival offers both wonder and menace. At its heart are orphan twins whose bond is tested as they navigate a world filled with outsiders, performers, and predators. The carnival becomes more than a backdrop. It is a stage for questions about belonging and survival, about how chosen families can shelter us even as they expose us to new dangers. We are delighted, as we always are, to welcome Dan Shaun to this week's book show. Thank you very much for being with us. What a delight to have you on the program.
Thanks, Joe. Very happy to be back.
I thought it was an interesting thing that at the author's note at the end of the book, and maybe it was the acknowledgement. Regardless, you said you thanked the people that were with you even as the book got weirder and weirder.
I mean, some editors would rather that you kind of stay on a path, and this particular editor, Carolyn Zanken, was like, "Don't be afraid to get weirder, Dan. People like you when you're weird." And I was like, "Oh, okay. I'm down with that."
But where was the weird level from the beginning? I mean, I guess just when you think that you're going to write about a carnival, there's already an element of weirdness in it.
Well, when I actually started the novel, it was more of a cowboy sort of thing. It was more about the twins with their uncle, and the carnival came in, and suddenly it started taking everything over. And you know, then I had to kind of recalibrate. You know, it started out as a story about these twin orphans who have psychic powers. This guy kidnaps them and hopes to use them as a, you know, to make money. And then they manage to run away, and they join this traveling carnival. And once they got into the carnival, I was just so charmed by it and so entranced by all the different characters that it really recalibrated everything that I had planned. And I asked my editor, "What is this okay? I mean, it just keeps getting more and more bizarre." And she's like, "Yeah, I think this is the way to go, rather than to go with a more traditional sort of Western crime drama."
But that wasn't something that it doesn't seem as something that concerned you, in the sense that you felt you were very much up for the task.
No, I mean, you know, my process when I'm writing a first draft is always about discovery. And, you know, I want to follow the things that sort of emerge from my subconscious or emerge from the process of getting to know the characters better and getting to know the world better. And, you know, I had already started doing research on, you know, these vaudeville shows and traveling carnivals and sideshows. And I had originally just thought it was going to be a, you know, a smaller incident within the larger sort of picaresque of the novel. Once it took over, I was perfectly happy to stay along for the ride.
As far as the sideshow carnival aspect of it, I mean, I think we all can picture that in our brains, and certainly the sideshow element of it, which you bring out wonderfully and comically. And once you're in that and you've dedicated yourself to it, it seems like you can go pretty much anywhere you want.
Oh yeah. One of the things that I was really drawn to was this, this iconography of the circus, which, has remained pretty steady for a long time, starting with, like children's books like Toby Tyler, that, they introduce a, a pretty standard set of characters. There's the skeletal man, there's the strong woman, there's the bearded lady, there's, et cetera, et cetera. And I wanted to take that iconography and really mess around with it and sort of explore that from the perspective of the people who are performing in these shows, rather than to look at them as, outsiders. And that became really that became really fun, and sort of creating different backstories for each of these characters became like kind of the heart for me of the story.
Minnie is the three-legged lady. There is, and this is one of my favorite characters, Thistle Breeches, a clown with no nose. Rosalie, who can foretell the death of anyone that she meets. And these are not only characters, but these become caretakers, if you will, to
Yes.
these orphaned twins who find themselves as a part of this carnival. And what a magnificent way to have them sort of interact with the world, because they got to that circus in under really scary circumstances.
Yes. Their mother died. Their father had been absent since before they could remember. And they lost their house, and suddenly this guy shows up telling them that he's their uncle and takes them off to, some shady parts of the Midwest where he is kind of a card shark and a gambler and occasionally murders people while they're acting as his assistants. And one night, in kind of a drunken rage, he kills a man with a steel or at the with an iron frying pan, and the twins decide, well, this is probably a good time to try to head out on our own. And they end up in an orphanage and are put on an orphan train and sent deeper into the Midwest.
In which they meet Mr. Jengling, who is founder of the Emporium of Wonders. And what is he in this for?
Well, I mean, he has a philosophy, a sort of, let's say, he thinks of himself as a benefactor to these people, but he's also a bit of a collector of unusual and odd things. He has lots of strange animals and infants and anomalies in jars. And in some ways, he's also collecting these people, even as he's sort of creating a home and a protective place for them. There's one character who I think sums up the issue really well. I'm gonna just read it. This is from the chapter about the hypnotist Dr. Choi, who is a Chinese man living in the United States during a period when the Chinese Exclusion Act was in effect. He's also 7 feet tall. He feels relatively safe here, though he is aware as he walks the circumference of the carnival that he is also pacing along the wall of a zoo's enclosure. Protected and yet trapped, included and collected. And I think that's one of the themes of the book, has to do with the way in which the carnival is a place of freedom. There's the adventurous aspect of running off to the carnival, but it's also a place in which people are excluded from the mainstream. They are, they're outsiders. And I think so that it's both a kind of our American dream to, escape and find freedom, but it's also our fear of being excluded from the, sort of normal life.
Dan Sean is our guest on this week's book show. The new novel is One of Us. Let us talk about the twins and Bolt and Eleanor. They're 13 years old, and what I found to be really cool to read about is when these two come into the circus. You would think there'd be just this bonding of the two of them in the strangest of locations, and yet they do go their own way.
Yeah, they have very different personalities. Eleanor is more bookish. She's more suspicious of people, and she really thinks that life should just be her and her brother and just the two of them. Whereas her Bolt is more gregarious and more eager to sort of make friends and join in and become a part of the circus. He has a lot of dreams and fantasies of becoming a monkey trainer or learning a contortionist skills.
So within the circus community, Bolt makes friends quicker than Eleanor, and it's harder for Eleanor to sort of find any camaraderie within this odd group.
Yeah, I think in part because she was sort of the more protector of the two. She was the one that sort of made sure that everything was working and on time. And Bolt was more of a kind of dreamy follower. And she likes being the boss. And once Bolt sort of starts making friends with other people and having ideas of his own, it's very perturbing to her.
The pacing of the novel I love. There are these little, they're just bursts every once in a while as you go through, and it keeps the pace just rolling as you go back through the different characters and different situations of where you left them and where they're coming back. Was it always your desire to keep it moving? Really like that, that circus train going from one town to another.
Absolutely. And I think the other engine that's driving it that kind of allows me to take moments and sort of explore other characters is that you always know that this bad guy, Uncle Charlie, is in the background looking for the twins, and he's sort of riding his horse wildly through the night in search of them. So you've got that tension that runs through the novel, and he's on his way. So I think that keeps the pace sort of at a pitch where I can, also take some moments to explore just the world of the circus, which I love and which was so fascinating to me.
How much of that did you know? How much of that did you investigate? And how much of that was just fun to make up?
I think I did do a lot of research. I feel like the overall framework of it is fairly accurate. I'd every once in a while I'd have to stop and figure out how does a person put a carousel together? And I literally watched a YouTube video about how to put a carousel together. And at the same time, there's sort of magical stuff going on, and that I think is invented. And I'm also taking cues from a big sort of thread in American literature, which we have a lot of great novels about the circus and about the carnival, and those were all sort of things I could look back on and draw on and sort of make a part of my own world.
You mentioned some of those in the end of the book, and they're you're right, they're all fascinating and wonderful books. What do you think it is about us that enjoys that weird world, to go back to an earlier word we used, that weird world of the carnival and a sideshow.
Right. Well, I think that it particularly for people that grew up in the early 20th century, like Ray Bradbury, for example, this was a once a year thing that happened in, small towns across America. There would be the county fair, and a carnival comes. And it's your one chance to sort of see the outside world and see sort of what you're missing in, if you're living in, say, Sydney, Nebraska, or Shenandoah, Iowa.
And that's the other cool thing, is there's just no corner really of the world that can be infiltrated, for want of a better term, by one of these sideshows or circuses.
And that was actually true. I mean, that was it, these traveling carnivals went to the smallest places. And usually, they had a regular route that they traveled every year. They would winter somewhere, sometimes in Florida, sometimes in Indiana. And then, starting in the spring, they'd do this little circuitous route through all these little towns.
When you look at your bad guy, your villain, there really is nothing. There's, I mean, you've gone all out on it, and making him, there's nothing likable about this character at all.
Well, I mean, no, but his kind of horribleness, actually, there were times when I found it pretty funny,
Oh yeah,
because
he's a great villain.
he's it's sort of like there's a little bit of Yosemite Sam in him in a way. He's an awful sort of cowboy killer person, but he's also has temper tantrums and doesn't get his way a lot. That's, I think, kind of amusing to me.
The name of the new novel is One of Us by Dan Shaun, and it is published by Holt. In that idea of having a somewhat inept an inept villain, of who has trouble putting one foot in front of the other, bumbling, I guess, would be a word. But it does, as you say, it really does lead down to the end. You know they're going to meet, you don't know how, and then it happens, and it's just delightful figuring out how it's all going to come together. How many shots at that did you take to get that to the point where you wanted it to be?
It did take a while, because there, and I won't deal with any spoilers, but there were a few twists and turns that fooled me, and one in particular that took me a while to figure out how I mean I had sort of painted myself into a corner, and it took me a while to figure out how to get out. So the readers will benefit from multiple attempts. My multiple attempts to escape the plot traps I laid for myself, and hopefully they'll be as surprised as I was by by some of the turns of events.
So I wonder, like, in the future, do you think, oh, do I try to avoid those, or if I just let myself go, if I get into it, I know I can get out of it?
Oh, I that's the way I've always worked, is to try to sort of find my way without outlining, and then figure out a way to get out of the stuck spots. And that, to me, is the thing that's one of the most fun things about writing, is not knowing how it's going to turn out. And I, you know, you have to, I guess you just have to trust that, if you know the characters well enough, you're going to find your way. And if you kind of have a template in some way, which I think, the genre itself gives you a template, right? We know sort of the basic template of the chase novel, the adventure novel. We know the basic template of the Western and the circus novel, which almost all circus novels are about acceptance and the choice to stay or go. In like a lot of children's books, like Toby Tyler and Circus Shoes and et cetera, it's always, you go to the circus, you have adventures, and then eventually you learn that there's no place like home, and you leave the circus an improved person, but you don't stay. At least in the old-fashioned in the old-fashioned ones. And I think Ray Bradbury suggests that the circus is kind of a temptation away from the good and wholesome world into a more into a sort of a darker, more phantasmagoric world. And I mean, his vision of the circus, I think, is very much as an antithesis to things that are wholesome, like family and community and so on and so forth.
And that's what's funny about a carnival or a circus, because it seems wholesome maybe from the outside, but you're there for about 5 minutes before you're like, ew. Right? I mean, and that's part of the fun, I think.
Yeah, no, I mean, one of the aspects of the carnival and the traveling sideshow is that you can go there to see these these strange and unusual people, but they're also people who wouldn't fit in to your hometown. They wouldn't be welcomed there for long.
They have found their place.
They have, but it's always moving from one place to another. I mean, there's a community, but there's also no settling.
This book is different from what you have written in the past. Are you always trying to do that?
Yes. I mean, in some ways, I have a pretty limited number of themes. I mean, I'm always writing about identity and about adoption and family and what aspects of our character and our nature and our experience add up to who we are. But I try to disguise that by shifting genres as much as I can. I mean, Ill Will was a straight up thriller. Sleepwalk was a book that sort of took place in a dystopic future. And I think maybe my next book is going to have some elements of high fantasy. I'm not entirely sure. I mean, I try to write towards the books that I love, try to write towards like something that I would personally want to read. And I don't just sort of focus on one genre when I'm reading. I really like to sort of skip around and dip my toes in lots of different things.
So when you think of that high fantasy, what would a goal be? What would a book that is elevated for you?
I guess I was I don't want to give away too much of this next book, but I was a kid who really liked Dungeons and Dragons a lot as a kid. And I think one of the things about it, and one of the things about certain kinds of video games, is it allows you this space to explore parts of your personality in a way, and explore things that you maybe wouldn't be able to talk about in real life. I mean, I think particularly for boys, it's hard to be able to talk about feelings and yourself in any way except in a sort of very programized way. And I think for me, fantasy and writing was a way to sort of get outside of that box.
In this particular novel, it's such a delightful place to spend time in, and is filled with so much, and there's humor, it can be frightening, and it's unsettling and exhilarating, and those are just all the things that you hope for. And I just I thought, man, to be able to put all that together and to keep all those plates spinning, is quite a feat.
Well, I had a lot of help. I had my you know but my I had a really great editor who helped me put all that stuff together. And then I have people that I trust who read for me as we go along. My sister's a really good reader. She's not like an editor or anything, but she really asks the right questions. And I love having somebody who's not a writer, not an editor, just a normal reader, give me feedback as I'm going along, because it really kind of helps to make the world seem like a real place. Like my sister and I will talk about it, as if they're as if the characters are people we're gossiping about. And it's the it, they become real as that in that process.
Dan Shaun's new novel is One of Us. It is published by Holt. Dan, what a delight to have you on the program. Thank you so much for being with us. A great treat.
Thank you so much.
Again, Dan Shaun's new novel is One of Us, published by Holt. Thanks to our producer, Sarah LeDuc. Write to us at book@wamc.org. The latest on national productions programs is available via the Airwaves newsletter at wamc.org and on social media at WAMC Radio. Bookmark us for next week, and thanks for listening. For The Book Show, I'm Joe Donahue.